The cold pierced my emaciated body. The wind swirled along the streets, sweeping away the snow sheets covering the frozen bodies. A twisted, white-gray hand protruded from the icy mass of corpses as if to beckon me with crumpled fingers. Far away, the artillery fire droned. But here, the wind was the only sound. The bitter chill kept all sounds away. I stepped through the dark door, descending the stairs. The stove stood cold when I entered the small cellar. I saw Yuri's twisted body on the floor. Dead. I turned him over and confirmed it. His bony face was gray-white and hollow. Magda lay curled up in his lifeless arms. She glanced up at me with empty eyes, but she was alive. I freed her gently from the deathly embrace and lifted her up. She said nothing. Two ration cards lay inside Yuri's coat. I pocketed Yuri's cards for myself, hesitated for a moment, and then took Magda's as well. She saw me do it, staring accusingly at me as if she understood that I had just signed her death warrant. At first, I thought about leaving her there, but the reproachful gaze made me wrap her in Yuri's coat, put her on his sleigh, and take her with me. We crossed the Griboyedova Canal and came up on the Kaprizova Street. Two people staggered along the wall of the house on the other side. A patrol guarded the crossing by the opera, its stone steps covered in frozen corpses. I passed the enclosure, the sentries on the bridge, and then turned left towards Kalenko's palace. Two sagging guards stood outside the gate. They barely looked at me when I knocked the door. An old man opened it. I placed the sleigh with Magda on it in front of the gate and stumbled backwards. Those who enter Kalenko's doors seldom come back out again. The old man gave me a toothless grin, lifted the girl with one arm as if she were some package, and then shut the gate behind him. I staggered back over the bridge through the snowy drizzle.
Hamburg, reunified Germany, 1991. The September rain is pattering against your window. You look out, and beyond the raindrops that gather on the glass, you see the Binnenalster, one of the artificial lakes in the center of town. It's usually very beautiful, and you have one of the best views in the city, but it's definitely less so in this horrible weather. Hamburg is an old merchant city on the water. Hundreds of years ago, it was an important part of the Hanseatic League that dominated trade in Northern Europe. Today, the busy port on the Elbe River serves a seemingly endless queue of container ships. Rows of loading cranes stand as colossi in the dim evening light. In the center of the city, St. Michael's Church, Michel. It's named so after the archangel bearing that name, and the statue above the portal to the church depicts him conquering the devil, spear in hand. The 132-meter high Baroque spire towers above the city and reminds the populace that God is always watching. But then again, who believes in God anymore? Regardless, there is victory in the air. The Cold War has ended and the dissolution of the Soviet Union is imminent. The Gulf War, a new kind of war with stealth bombers and computer-guided missiles, has shown that the now truly united nations can keep the world safe from those wishing harm upon others. There should be a great sense of hope and relief in the old merchant city, yet all that can be felt is a profound sense of foreboding, as if a dark cloud hung above the city. It's opportunity that draws you to Hamburg, because with great social upheaval always comes great opportunity. Opportunity to to profit. Oh, and opportunity to help people and learn and better yourself as a human being, of course. Yes, best not forget that. It's around 6 p.m. and you are in your apartment doing your final preparations before attending the gold plaque dinner at the Hamburg Rathaus, the city hall, at 8 p.m. The gold plaque is awarded by the German Authors Association to a poet every year. The two of you have been invited there because of you, Björn von Krusenstjerna. Your investments in East Germany, helping to modernize old Soviet-style industries and save jobs, has led you to getting a lot of positive press. Among the elite in Germany, you are celebrated as a philanthropist, and you receive invitations like this one frequently. Björn, your driver will pick you up in your Mercedes at 7:45. City Hall is actually well within walking distance from where you live, but if there's anything you've learned, it is that making an entrance is an art, and one that you really cannot overdo. So it's late summer, September the 14th. The rain continues to patter against your window. Your apartment is a penthouse suite on Neuer Jungfernstieg. It's right by the Fairmont Hotel, the most luxurious hotel in the city that also happens to sport the best restaurant in all of Hamburg. It's really not a coincidence that you chose to live here. Björn, we see you walking around in the apartment. Can you describe yourself and the interior decoration?
The flat is quite bright and functional. Most of it is white concrete with a pale marble floor. In the hallway, there are several Japanese shoes parked, meant for visitors. The flat consists of this hallway, a bedroom, a sparsely furnished guest room, and an adjoined kitchen and living room. It is a rather spacious balcony, but a third of it is currently occupied by a life-sized horse statue made out of crinkled-up bronze, with a missing head. An art lover would recognize the style of Alberto Giacometti. In the living room, there is a medium-sized television. It's black, standing on a wide, white shelf. Above it and on the sides of it are various swords, sabers, daggers, and bayonets, all looking fairly old. There are five white armchairs, made out of leather, surrounding a low table. There's no proper dining table, it more feels like a leisurely place. And the room in itself, like most of the apartment, it would be quite white and clean, but in its current state, this room is a bit cluttered with various books of different ages in need of cataloging. There is also a guest room consisting of a wardrobe, bed, nightstand, and a big absurd painting that seems to portray the static of a broken television with a text under it saying, "From a dimension beyond the living, a terror to scare you to death." Very comforting. Björn's own bedroom is slightly smaller, but with the same arrangement of furnitures. The only decoration is a tiny shelf with a small Dutchman's pipe cactus. From the bedroom, there is also an extensive walk-in closet, where you could see five glass stands, where eight books of varying ages are portrayed. One of them is a manuscript, and we got us a couple of different kinds of styles of books if you decide to look closer on them. Right, basically it's quite functional.
Carver, we see you sitting down, studying a book with a magnifying glass, checking its authenticity. How do you look like, and what is this collection all about?
Well, as I'm studying the book, I'm leaning over it, quite content looking. I'm a reasonably Finnish man in my late 30s, with longish blonde hair down to the shoulders, bit of stubble on the chin. I do try and keep up appearances, but only to a certain extent. The collection is very interesting, largely because of the amount of different sources of the material. It's not all just one author, or even one time period, or even one theme. It's a very sparse collection of multiple authors, multiple themes, and multiple points of origin, but they all seem to share a similarity, which is quite hard to actually discuss. I mean, quite a few people interested in the collection have many theories on what the similarity is. Are they talking about similar concepts? Are there familiar characters that they speak about? That sort of thing. But it's hard to actually pinpoint, you know. For someone like me, anyway. I'm only really concerned in the possible value and rarity of the collection's contents.
The collection is worth a lot of money. It really had better be, given the amount of Bjorn's money that you gave for it. While Mr. Telfer gave you an inventory of the collection, you've found some discrepancies, books that shouldn't have been included and others that are missing. But given Mr. Telfer's recent suicide, you can't exactly claim a refund. Putting that on his widow now would not be good for your reputation. We see something else, something a little bit out of what you would expect. There's an animal in the apartment. It's a cat.
Yes, indeed. But that's no surprise to me. That's my friend, Jenkins. Grey-haired tabby with bright green eyes. He's a funny creature. I've only really had him for a year or two, mainly since I've been living in Germany, but he just appeared one day, looking for scraps of food, and well, I don't get much company, so I welcomed his attention, and he's stuck with me since then.
It's nice to have friends. Bjorn, can we get a description of how you look as well here now as you're getting dressed?
Alright, well, the Swedish Bjorn, he looks like he has had a pretty hard life, and it's almost hard to believe that he's still in his 30s. He's got a sharp, challenging pair of eyes, and he's got a kind of playboyish air about him. He is always, more or less, wearing his suits and often matching stylish gloves. Nothing in his face, except for his mentioned eyes, stand out much. He's a rather mundane look. Though his features are quite sharp, he's got short, tidy, blonde hair, few grey ones, if you can spot him, and few crinkles. He's got a broad smile, most often, but it doesn't really extend to his eyes. He feels a little bit empty, perhaps.
The TV is on in the background. It's showing the music video for Everybody Dance Now by CNC Music Factory. A song that has been plaguing radio stations for much of this year. Perhaps this is what is causing that strange feeling of foreboding. So, what are you doing now? You still have almost two hours left until the driver is gonna come pick you up.
Yeah, I'm just getting out of the shower, wrapping a towel around me and starting to shave my face. I'm shouting out from the bathroom to you. Are you sure you want to come along to this? I know you still got a lot of cataloging to do.
It's not really my thing, I'll admit, but, you know, who knows? Maybe I can pick up a good new contact, find out some information. I did dress up, after all, I say as I adjust my best shirt and jacket, although it's also probably my only good shirt and jacket that I've owned for many years. Sorry about this, but my cat seems to have got in your apartment somehow.
Yeah, I didn't notice.
I laugh and I give Jenkins a little pet on the head.
Jenkins promptly runs off to the bathroom and appears there. Bjorn, what do you do?
What are you doing in here?
Cat is looking at you, staring at you with its big eyes. It approaches.
Why is he always coming to the bathroom?
You know cats. Same with me when I'm at home.
What, you follow him to when he's going on the box?
Very droll, Bjorn, very droll. Obviously he follows me. Although how did he get in anyway? And I do look around just to see if there's a window open nearby, because even I'm a little bit perplexed. It's not the first time he's followed me while I've been working, but it's always a little strange, even for me.
You look around and you can't really see a clear way how he got in.
Okay. Well,
don't worry though, before we go I'll put him out and he'll find his way home. He always does, somehow.
make sure he doesn't, you know, dirty up the place. Cleaner's not coming until day after tomorrow.
I nod and return to just doing a few last checks on the volume I currently have in hand.
Do I need to bring anything? Was I supposed to have gotten a gift for this?
Why would you be given a gift?
I don't know. I just tend to forget these things. My assistant doesn't, you know, sort out all my small indulgements, whatever you might call it.
I mean, I'm sure I don't need to ask, but you aren't expected to say anything, are you? Like a little speech about the, you know, guest of honor and all that?
Yeah, right, yeah. I'm sure. I'm sure my assistant has written up something for me.
Well, I hope so. It'd be a bit awkward otherwise.
I look inside of the pockets of my other suits to see if I found an old speech from a previous occasion. Yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine. Oh, this looks nice. Put on a black suit and a red and blue tie. Strangely obscene patterns of spirals. Yeah, they'll love this.
I just pat myself down, make sure I've got my reading glasses on me. I don't need them all the time, but in my line of work for the fine print, especially as I'm getting on, I do find I need them now to see the smaller details.
Hey, did I offer you a bourbon? Did you get something to drink?
Oh. Actually, you didn't. I suppose a glass couldn't hurt. Sure, why not?
All right, let me mix you something up.
Oh, this stuff better be good, Bjorn. I'm expecting high standards from you.
I give a smile and hand over the glass and raise my cheers.
Hey, to a lovely evening.
You look down at the book, Carver, the one that you were studying. It's Compendium Maleficarum. What's in this book?
Well, it's largely a catalogue of 14th century demonology. Very, in my opinion, trivial stuff. The classics, most of it derived from folklore of the time. Interesting, though.
You find anything good?
Oh, well, how much are you into your folklore?
Not much. I'm just curious if it's genuine. How are we finding the collection? Are things missing?
Yes, I've noticed some discrepancies. There's a few things on the list that I expected to receive that I haven't. And at the same time, there's a few things that I do have that aren't on the list. Typical, really. Probably some amateur clerk made a mess or two, but, you know, nothing that I'm that concerned about. I do take a moment to look over the watermarking of this book and just check its authenticity. I'm pretty sure it is authentic, but is it?
Yes, indeed it is. This is a very, very good copy of this book. One of the finest you have ever seen. This will fetch a pretty penny.
I have to say, Bjorn, though, this one is actually quite a good one. Quite rare, very good condition, and of great interest to not only folklorists, but also people with a little bit of a interest in poetic verse. The author is very well-spoken in her descriptions, for the time period at least.
Really? When is it from?
Oh, let's see. If I was to roughly date it, I'm pretty sure it's going to be somewhere from like 1310, 1340. That was the author's main period of writing. Always hard to exactly get that right these days, but yes.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, maybe that will be. I'll see if I decide to keep it or sell it on, but I did, you know how much I spent on this. I just don't want anything to fall in between.
No, well, I definitely put this one on your list, Mr. Bjorn. This could fetch a pretty penny with the right buyers. I might even know at least two off the top of my head.
Yeah, you think that Boris Balkan or the Baroness Kessler might be quite interested in this one.
Ah, not bad. Not bad. How much do you think they'll give for it?
More than enough. This will, more than you gave. You got quite a bargain, actually.
I'd say beyond this one, I could expect at least double the value. Triple if maybe negotiations go really well, but, you know, At least double, at least.
All right.
As you're studying the books, time passes. You enjoy the bourbon, you enjoy the conversation, and you see light coming in from outside. You see headlights from a car flashing. Your driver signaling to you that it's time to leave.
Up, that's our cue.
Yes, I close the book for now. My interest peaked for the moment, and I stand up to get ready to go.
I made my excuses, you know, in case we gotta leave early, in case things just drag on, as it sometimes tend to do, but yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Very nice.
The concierge of your building, Herman, he's an older gentleman in a suit and white hair, way past his retirement age, by the way. Yeah, wishes you a pleasant evening on the way out.
Thank you, Herman. You too.
He follows you and holds up an umbrella so that you can get into the car without getting wet. And the interior of the car is just like you, Bjorn. It's everything one would expect. It's got leather seats, car phone. You almost wish the drive to the Rathaus was longer.
How do you like it, Carver?
Not a bad ride, I say. Certainly better than mine. Also, just before I got in the car, I made sure to get Jenkins out of the flat, gave him a little pet on the head and said, "Go on, boy, home."
Looking out the windows of the car, you see people rushing home to get on buses and trains, protected from the rain by umbrellas and all vivid colors of the rainbow. The driver takes a drive around the city, given that you still have a little bit of time left. And also, you know, you do want to be fashionably late. You arrive at the Hamburg Rathaus after maybe 20 minutes of driving around Hamburg. The building, the city hall, is a very imposing building. It's also overlooking the artificial lake, the Binnenalster. You know that it was built at the end of the 1800s, a period of great prosperity for the city of Hamburg. In the Franco-German War, the Germans had emerged victorious and the German Empire was formed. The building reflects this part of history well with its neo-Renaissance exterior and more than 100 meter tall tower. The Mercedes stops in front of the entrance. Seems like the rain has forced them to remove the outdoor red carpet.
What's this? They didn't even fix a proper overhang to get the water out.
Well, what can you do?
The driver opens the door and stands ready with umbrellas for both of you.
Thank you.
Enjoy your evening, sir.
You too. I'll see you. I'll let you know when we're about. You'll be here. What am I?
Yes. Of course.
I'll see you later.
He gets back into the car and drives off. The balcony at the entrance of the city hall is surmounted by a mosaic of Hamburg's patron goddess of Harmonia and the coat of arms of the city. You can also read in the rain the Latin motto of the city, translating to "The freedom won by our elders, may posterity strive to preserve it in dignity." Ceremonial guards in colorful medieval liveries nod courteously as you enter the lobby of the city hall. These outfits must be similar to those worn during the days of the Hanseatic League. The ceiling of the lobby is held up by marble pillars, and the decorations, statues of lions in dark stone, are truly exquisite. Here, the elite of Hamburg and Panjandrums from other parts of what used to be West Germany are gathered, enjoying Rieslingwein and hors d'oeuvres. One can even spot a few former communist apparatchiks from the East that have somehow successfully transitioned into new roles in the reunified states. What do you do?
I straighten myself up a little, look around, admire the decor, which is quite impressive.
Alright, so who am I supposed to say hi to at this one?
Oh, you recognize quite a few people. You nod courteously, you shake hands. You do what you're supposed to do. You've done this a million times. Do you like it?
Yeah, I'm not having a too bad time. What kind of music are they playing?
Oh, it's classic German music.
Yeah, this is alright. I kind of like this, but I would prefer something a bit more upbeat. Yeah, well, it's, yeah. It's good people. They're doing good things. It's nice to mingle around a bit and just, yeah, say hi.
And the award ceremony will be taking place in the Great Ballroom. And since you've arrived fashionably late, you actually start noticing people already starting to move there. Do you follow the flow or do you remain behind?
Yeah, I think it's time for a dance. Are you joining, Carver?
Well, I'm not one for dancing, but I suppose best to be where everyone else is, eh?
Yeah, you should. Some good hits this year. But too, you should don't miss the lobster snacks. They're absolutely delicious.
Oh, really? Ah, well, I'm a bit hungry, actually. Although, also in the mood for another drink.
All right, let's go in there.
The ballroom has a domed ceiling and glittering crystal chandeliers. Tables of solid oak are decorated with white silk tablecloths and candles. It's filling up the entire hall. You're called to be seated, and waiters in similar liveries to the staff you met earlier dart back and forth with plates. A quiet hum of voices fill the room, softly echoing off the arches. You quickly find your assigned seats. You're sitting next to each other.
How thoughtful.
Excellent, I sit down.
How do you do? A lady in her mid-30s, dressed in a smart champagne gold dress, has been seated across from you on the table. She's got jet black hair, dark skin, and a pair of stylish glasses. There's an air of curiosity about her, and sadness.
Much better now, thanks. My name's Bjorn. Oh, you can reach out my hand.
Oh, yes, she shakes your hand politely. And you are?
Carver, James Carver. A pleasure, madam. I give a solemn nod.
My name is Sophia Shivute. Very nice to meet you. She smiles politely again and then picks up an Underberg herb bitter, looking wholly unbothered by the wretched taste of the drink as she downs it.
Not bad.
Next to her sits an older gentleman with a grey moustache and bald head. He nods politely and lights his pipe. His wife, perhaps, who sits next to him, tries to waft away the smoke as the pipe lights up. The man looks a little bit like Otto von Bismarck, just without the charisma.
I offer a friendly nod in his direction as well. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. He blows out a bit more smoke. Salmon, pâté, and drinks are served. The waiters ask you for what you would like to drink.
What do we have today? We got salmon, pâté. How is a good Riesling, perhaps?
Yes, of course, we have only the best. Would you like some wine, sir?
Yes, please. Just a simple house red will do me just fine.
You sure to the pâté? It's salmon.
You have that finer palate, Bjorn. I just want a good drink.
Just give the man what he wants.
You receive your drinks, the red wine and the Riesling wine. The dinner begins and the hum of voices grows ever larger. People start to enjoy the food and, the drinks have their desired effect. The lady in the champagne gold dress, Sophia, she meets your eyes as you've started to eat, strikes up conversation with you. Tell me, are you familiar with the concept of the end of history?
Yeah, sure. You're talking about the political system, the revolution.
Yes. This American, Francis Fukuyama, he's recently written a very interesting piece where he suggests that what we now may be witnessing is not just the end of the Cold War or the passing of a particular period of post-war history, but really the end of history as such, the end point of our ideological evolution and the final universalization of the Western liberal democracy as the final form of human government. essentially he's saying that society can't really progress beyond this liberal democracy, capitalism based, of course, and that history has essentially proven that this is it. What do you think? Does this feel like an end to you?
Not at all, no. Not for me. I've read it, and it's interesting reading, but someone who's been reading books some thousands of years old, it's nothing new, not really. 1,000 years ago, people were writing similar things, implying that the world as it was back then was the world it would be forever. You know, I just don't feel anyone can accurately predict the future to that extent.
Democracy really is the future, I think. I mean, if you just take into account the tendency of democracies not waging war on each other, I think more and more will just unite as well. As they do, the rest of the world will see the same benefits. Trade keeps increasing and more people will want to join. It'll take time, but I think we're heading towards what will be probably a final product, as long as we like keep the madmen from usurping the throne, if you catch my drift.
I truly hope that this is the end of history. I would like to believe that we have achieved something as humanity. Let's be optimistic. To the future. She holds up her drink, a glass of wine, and
to the future, Sophia. Carver?
To the future. Why not?
Next, the venison is served. And the night progresses quite nicely. You've been in deep discussions with Sophia about all kinds of topics. You tried to strike up a conversation with Otto and his wife, but they weren't particularly interesting. So Sophia continues. So Nietzsche and Hegel, and you notice that she's had quite a lot to drink now. She's starting to, you know, the voice isn't completely what it was when you first started talking. Nietzsche and Hegel, they've already taught us that God is dead, right? And we're just coming to terms with this in slow motion. Like, there's no heaven, there's no happy ever after. And with communism now having failed for good, hopefully, the dream of any ideology creating some kind of utopia here on Earth is also dead, right? So, I mean, what are we working for now? Like, just accumulate stuff and die buried by it? How do you keep going?
Oh, I don't know. I feel there's more to life than we put into it. I don't know why. I mean, I don't think I'd go as far as God is dead. But maybe there was never a God in the first place, or what was God never cared. Do you know what I mean? Like, I believe there's something more to all this. I think there is, but I just don't think we've grasped what that is. And how could we? I mean, why would we be able to understand that? Eh, Bjorn?
Yeah. I know what you mean. Well, the advent of mass production and, things just having a serial not meaning as much as they did before, I think we'll turn a bit more backwards, perhaps, in, you know, appreciating the things that were made with a certain, sense of art, like old books. Me and Carver, for example, we've currently gotten ourselves and our hands in quite a nice collection of literature.
She looks at you fascinated with fascination in her eyes. Oh, books. You're a collector.
Yeah. I'm a bit of a it's a bit of a hobby. I'm not doing it as a main thing, but Carver here helps me out, make sure the things that I acquired are genuine and will.
Yes, Bjorn's been a good customer of mine for some time. I suppose I collect a little myself, but I'm more into the buying and selling on off the products, or doing it for other people like Bjorn here, don't have quite the same expertise. But yes, I find it interesting. It's one of the things I like to read about, because I suppose I like to try and dabble at what the truth is, even if we'll probably never find it, eh, Sophia?
Indeed. Hey, so if you're collecting books, do you have the De Umbrarum Regis Novum, Novum Portis, yes? The one by Aristide Torchet. Do you have that one? I've been looking all over for that one.
Why would you ask for such a specific book?
Haven't you heard about it? It supposedly has, like, all the answers. Like, maybe the answers to the questions I was just asking. The meaning of life.
No one book is going to have all the answers. I mean, remember, they're always coloured by the perceptions of the author. Do I have that book or have heard of it?
It's the one that you're still looking for.
Is it one that's missing from the collection?
It is. You thought you got it this time, but it wasn't there.
Actually, though I have heard of it, Sophia, unfortunately we don't have that one yet.
What do you mean?
It's a shame, actually.
Wasn't that supposed to have been in the shipment?
Yes, it was actually, but it seems to be misplaced. Quite annoying, actually, but I'm hoping it is just misplaced rather than lost, Bjorn. Don't worry, I've got some people looking for it.
Yeah. Turn back to Sophia. Well, it's nice that you have this shared interest. I wish we could supply you with that specific one. Are you a collector yourself, then?
I mean, it is what I do in my profession. I work at the university. Doctor of German literature. Maybe you've read some of the books I've written. I wrote a biography of Thomas Mann. It came out about a year ago or so.
I think I had a quick look through it. Yeah, it was very well done. Yeah, is that you that wrote it?
Yes, yes. Oh, I'm so happy. So happy that people read my work. I'm sorry. I think I might have had a little bit too much to drink. It's really embarrassing. Let me go and catch some air. Sorry to leave so rudely.
Not a problem, madam. If anything, I apologize for not having read the book myself. I'll put it on one of my lists, though.
So she disappears. And you find yourself now sitting there, the two of you. You got Otto on the other side of the table, and a few seats away from you, a rather famous CEO from one of the previously West German companies. He's gotten a bit too much to drink, and he's droning on and on about this Japanese Kaizen method of improving standardized processes and routines to eliminate waste. It's exactly as interesting as it sounds. He's assuring his captive audience that Japan will own all of Germany in just a few decades, you'll see. Sophia does not come back, and a completely unknown poet named Leon Schütze wins the Gold Plaque Award this year. Is exactly what the wife of Otto von Bismarck says. She takes a big drag from her pipe and breathes out the smoke. Otto wafts it away and gives her a bothered look. These juries, instead of giving the plaque to someone who has actually reached people and impacted lives, they just pick some nobody to prove that they have more refined taste than we do. Well, congratulations, German Authors Association. You win again. Come, dear, it's time to go. Otto coughs demonstratively and gets up to leave with his wife.
I frown a little. I mean, have I even heard of this guy?
Leon Schütze, no. No, you have not heard of him.
Safe travels home, I say to the leaving.
They nod politely.
I remark to Bjorn after they've left. A little bit of a surprise there, to be honest. Kind of expected someone who I don't know who'd actually made a bit of impact in the literary world.
Yeah, well, I suppose we're going to have to read it now, just to see what value there is in it.
With the dinner over, the gathering starts to spread out through the Rathaus smaller public rooms. The tables are actually removed, and dance commences. Many of the guests are content and slightly drunk. What situation and what state are you in right now?
I've had a few drinks as well. I'm starting to feel something in between jolly and tired, and that I should either have some more drinks and liven up, or I should just head back home.
I feel pleasantly jolly, though I have the moment stopped. And I, at the comment Bjorn made, have just started looking around, like I'm trying to recall where Sophia actually went when she left the table.
You're looking around, and that's when something, or rather someone, catches your eye. It's a group of four people, three middle-aged men and a woman. The three men wear tailcoats with exclusive cuts. The woman, dark-haired, has a full-length silken gown with a white short cutaway. You recognize her, as well as the man in the group who looks a bit more harrowed than the rest. This is your old friend Magda Orlova. The harrowed man reminds you of someone, Carver. Who was it again? This is probably Philip Kramer. He's a painter of some talent that you said hello to during an art show. Must have been in West Berlin in the early 80s, perhaps? He's gotten a bit of a bad reputation since then. Have severe drug problems. Word is that he's actually a Satanist. Like an actual one, not like one of those heavy metal ones.
I see. Huh, I would nudge Bjorn and go, hey, is that... It's Miss Magda, isn't it? Over there? With the woman with the three men. Can you see?
I'm looking a bit distracted the other way. And I didn't really catch that. I'm sorry, what's that? I was going to get a Singapore sling. Do you want one?
Oh, sure. You go get that. I'll just be a moment.
The men seem to have noticed you. You notice that they're staring at you. Carver, you have always been able to get a bit of a sense out of people. Is that fear coming from their eyes? Yes, it must be. There's a short, quiet conversation that takes place between the men and Magda, and you notice the three men starting to say their polite goodbyes, as if they're leaving.
This feeling surprises me a little. I kind of look down at my empty glass. I put it down, thinking maybe I've had more to drink than I thought. I don't know why I'd be feeling this. I mean, this is a nice evening, after all. I suppose I just watch for a while then before actually heading over.
You stand there and you watch. Bjorn, what are you doing now?
I'm trying to find someone that will get me a drink.
It goes quite quickly, actually. You get a hold of the Singapore slings that you were looking for. Carver, these polite goodbyes, they take a while. You're still standing there and looking at the three men and Magda when Bjorn comes back.
There you are. Okay, so what was this you wanted me to... And I look up at the company that obviously Carver is observing as well.
And this is when Magda notices you.
And then I put up a finger pointing at her. Well, well, well.
You can see surprise, joy, and anxiety cross her face for a few moments. She smiles, seemingly waiting for you to come over to her.
Yeah, come on, Carver. You gotta meet this one. This is an amazing woman, and as I make my way over.
Oh, I remark as I follow him, taking a little sip. I know, Bjorn. Maybe you don't know, actually. I went to a bookstore when she had it open. A long time ago now, back in the 80s, but, you know.
Really?
Yes, I did, yes.
When was that?
Oh, was it 1981, 1982?
Wow!
No, it was before that. It was more like 1979. Yes, there you go. Yes, we did some good business, but I'm surprised to see her, to be honest.
Ah, and then we come up to her. So, Magda, I open my arms to greet her and kiss her on the cheek.
You approach her, and when you come close, you see that she appears wary and tired. It was a little bit of time since you last saw her, but it wasn't that long ago. It seems like she's aged 10 years in the time since you last met. She even seems to have shrunk somewhat. Her arms and legs are completely covered by the grey-white dress. She removes her white gloves to shake hands with you, but then she sees that you're coming to give her a hug and a kiss, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and she of course allows you to do that and kisses you back. Carver, how do you greet Magda?
I nod, smile, say, Magda, it's been a while. Good to see you. And I just cautiously look over to see what's happened to the other three men at this point, if they've left.
They have left. You cannot see them anywhere. And Bjorn, you notice up this close, you notice that she's wearing an overly strong perfume.
You look great. Wow. It's been ages. I didn't thought you would be here in Hamburg.
Oh yeah, yes. I just came back quite recently. Actually, I spent some time in Berlin. It's so great to see you. And she shakes your hand as well, Carver. You also smell this strong perfume, Carver. There's something wrong with Magda. You don't really know how you know this, but she carries a darkness that is slowly consuming her. It's reminiscent of the mortally ill or those suffering mental instability. He says this really, really clearly. James, she puts on a brave smile, and I'm so happy to see you again. Why don't we make a toast? A toast to friends reuniting.
Sure. Did you have a drink? Do you want this one? I'll get a new one.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Yes, of course. A toast to...
Yeah, let's make it champagne. She waves over a waiter, and within not a particularly long time, you have a fresh bottle of champagne that is poured up in glasses to you.
Sure.
So, to friends reuniting.
To friends reuniting. That's just such a surprise that you both knew each other as well. Just a lovely surprise. I smile with everything but my eyes.
Yes, I go to join in the toast, though a little frown has passed my face just for a moment. I then remark quite casually, "Was that, Kramer? Mr. Kramer?"
Yes, Philip. You know of him as well. He's an old friend of mine. We spent a lot of time together when I was living in the East. He's one of my oldest friends.
Lovely.
But let's not speak about that. Let's speak about you. What have you been up to?
Well, me, the same old, selling books, buying books, the usual. I managed to move on most of the ones I bought from you, actually, by this point. Currently, I'm working with Bjorn here on a very interesting collection. Isn't that right, Bjorn?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I'm starting, actually, since we met, I've just started working a bit more with trying to get myself a nice little collection and perhaps trading a bit with books. And Carver here has provided an extraordinary, source of intelligence and an advisor. That's the word I'm looking for. There we are.
Ah, you give me too much credit.
Well, you know your things, right? Yeah.
And I've read in the paper about you, Bjorn, about your investments in the East. Truly magnificent to see someone daring to take risks such as that to help. I had that feeling when I first interviewed you. I'm happy to see that you've continued with your good work.
I look a bit uncomfortable at all this praise, but yeah, I'm nodding and I'm sipping the champagne and my Singapore sling, and it's like, yeah, well, I feel like someone's got to make progress, you know. It's you know what I do and why I do it. I'm glad that you appreciate it. Yeah,
the world is better off because of people like you, and of you, Carver. You help preserve knowledge and help it reach the people who are interested in it. Not everyone sees value in books in the same way as we do.
Well, you know how I feel about it. I feel, at the end of the day, what do we have other than the truth that we write down? Or at least a version of the truth.
Indeed. No truer words were ever said. What did you think about the award? Have you read any of Mr. Schütz's work?
Honestly, no. I'm actually a little surprised, Magda. I kind of thought we'd be entertaining someone a little more influential, if you know what I mean.
Yes, this is quite a common criticism of the German Authors Association. But I've actually picked up some of his work. I have to admit, I did so during during tonight. I quite enjoyed the Prince of the Grail. Have you read that one?
No.
Let me just read this passage to you. I found it really amazing. Wenn wir uns ansehen, blühen unsere Augen. Und wie wir staunen vor unseren Wundern, nicht? Und alles wird so süß. Von Sternen sind wir eingerahmt und flüchten aus der Welt. Ich glaube, wir sind Engel.
Painting a picture, isn't it? It's very atmospheric.
You think that was German, but you're not really sure. You couldn't really pick up what she was saying.
I try to look as if I understand, but yeah.
You see that she sighs a little bit after reading it, as if she's tired. And again, you see her age. You see her tiredness. She sits down on a chair.
Are you all right, Magda? You seem, you okay?
Bjorn, I haven't been sleeping recently. I shouldn't destroy this nice atmosphere that we have here. It's just, speaking of dark things, it's nightmares. The same terrible dreams. It's been every night since I moved back to Berlin. I can't get rid of them. I think I'm going crazy.
Oh, now Magda, what we dream, it's all nonsense, right? You know that. I mean, okay, sometimes it can have some deep-seated reasoning, but it's all just your subconscious. It can't harm you, not really.
She nervously rubs her hands against her dress. I've been living in Berlin for the last couple of months. You know, it is my old hometown. I decided to move back to Hamburg, though, hoping that getting away from there might, you know, help relieve the bad dreams. But it's the same thing every night. I hardly dare sleep anymore.
Have you spoken to someone about it?
Maybe I should seek help, right?
I kind of lose my big smiling face there for a bit. Dreams can be real bother. Yeah. Maybe you should. Maybe it'll help just to talk about it. What is it that you dream about? Is it something that happened to you?
I wince a little as he says this, as probably I want to ask the same question as well, but I wasn't courageous enough to ask it.
She, I guess you sit down probably as well, seeing as how she's sitting now here by table. She puts her her hand on yours, becomes noticeably pale and increasingly nervous. She stares down at the table for a good long while, and when she raises her gaze again, her features are darkened by restrained suffering. I don't remember it that well. Everything is fuzzy and unclear, but I'm young, very young in the dream. I'm just a child. I'm locked up for being disobedient. It's so dark. Something keeps moving there in the darkness, and then the pain, it just cuts right through me, becoming my entire world. The dream becomes endless pain, and I can't remember anything properly after that, just pain, vague impressions of things moving in the dark, until I finally wake up. She's ghostly pale when she finishes the story. She's shaking noticeably. Her eyes nervously wander and a cold sweat glazes her forehead.
I take a sort of nervous sip from a drink. I lean in. And I don't perhaps sound 100% certain myself, but I try and offer some condolences. I try and say, well, I've had a little bit of a past myself with something like that, Magda, but it helps to remember that you're a strong person. I know this, you know this. Hold on to that, yeah? Because that can help with mental things, but maybe if it is troubling you that much, I suppose maybe talking to someone with actual training could help. But that's just an opinion from a friend to a friend.
Yeah, I should do that. I've spoken to some quite a few people already, but yeah, I shouldn't give up.
Just know you're not going crazy. You're not going crazy, Magda.
Of course you shouldn't give up. You just hang in there and you know, just it'll sort itself out. Did you is it something you've read? I mean, or is it like maybe it's does it come from something you've been working with?
I can't say for sure. I think back to my childhood, but, well, it was a dark time, and I don't really want to think about it. I'm happy at least to have Anton and Sasha and Philip with me now. We spent so much time together back in East Germany, with friends like them and friends like you. I'm sure I can get through this. I'm sorry. Sorry for rambling on about myself and my weakness. It should be a fun evening, but I'm afraid it's getting late and I'm very tired. I should be getting home. Maybe tonight I won't have the nightmares. Maybe seeing you again will have chased them away.
Yeah, of course it will. And you know, just maybe that's where we have it. I look suddenly as if everything's been resolved, and I open my arms and I smile. There we have it. It's just maybe some repressed memories, some childhood things. We all have those. We just go through stuff, and some things really mess us up. We just need to sort them out. Just need a good listener and someone to talk to. You know, you've got me here in Amber. Feel free to come by anytime, mate. You know you're welcome.
Thank you so much, Björn, and thank you, Carver, as well. It's been a lovely evening. I hope to see you soon again. Let's catch up again soon. I think I have your number, right?
Yeah. Nothing's changed. It's the same old.
She gets up. She smiles bravely, and she leaves you sitting there at the table. The evening is coming to an end, and it's really time to get back home. It's quite late. Only the really drunk ones are left now.
Well, this turned out a little bit later than I expected, but then again, we've met some old acquaintances. Turned out quite nice.
Yes, I say with a slightly distracted tone, but I look around, and once again, I'm just trying to see if I can see Sophia.
She is completely vanished.
Again, I try to recall when she left. Where did she go? Like, did she go to a balcony or like a room, one of the room's exits?
You recall her going towards one of the balconies.
I say to Björn, finishing my drink, my last drink of the evening, I think I'll just get some air, and then you can come and find me when...
Ah, that's a great idea. Of course we should get some air. Do you want a cigar? I think I've got actually two left here.
Yes, let's have a smoke. I say quietly to him, I confess I know it's strange, but I feel very sorry for Magda. I don't know what's going on there.
She looked pretty haggard.
Yes, well, I almost felt rude to ask if has she been ill lately or something like that. I don't know, it's been so long. It's a shame, really. We had a good relationship for a couple of years there when we were dealing together.
Yeah, she could actually, yeah, there's a lot of weird things going around since the 80s, you know.
You share a cigar there on the balcony. You keep looking for Sophia, but she's nowhere to be found. The rain has stopped. Streets of Hamburg are eerily quiet.
Well, I suppose now's as good a time as any. Are you gonna use my guest room tonight?
Oh, why not? I suppose another little drink and a little look at the books won't hurt.
And we can start early in the morning as well, so yeah, let's do that.
Yes, why not? Let's go. And I put down my glass and follow him, leaving the area.
Heading towards the lobby and to get our driver to pick us up again.
I'm sorry, Mr. von Krusenstern. I cannot find your driver, actually. It seems like he has gone home for the night.
What? Do we have a long walk? How far away is it?
So it's like 5 minutes walk. You really didn't need to come here by car, but it looks so much better to do that. But maybe a walk before bed. Maybe that's not so bad, actually, you know? Get a little bit of, you know, freshness so you don't have to wake up in the morning with a hangover.
Well, yeah, it's not that far. We made our grand entrance, and the exit seems to just run out in the gutter. Rain stopped as well, so what do you say we take the walk? It's just 5 minutes.
I suppose, why not? It's just a short walk.
Be some fresh air.
Taking a deep breath.
There we are.
Look around.
You make a mental note to yourself to really look into why did this driver not show up? I mean, you're paying him. This is really not acceptable, is it, Bjorn?
No, not at all. That's really weird. I'm just going to have a call and talk that through tomorrow.
So the streets are as I said, they're eerily quiet. Sometimes the quiet is interrupted by the loud laughter of drunken people, you know, coming from like a door opening to a restaurant or a club, the booming bass of a nightclub that you pass by, those kinds of noises, Eurodance music.
I look at my expensive watch. What time is it now?
What time do you think it is? Maybe 1 o'clock?
Yeah, I suppose it wouldn't be like super late. It's an official event after all. Yeah, around one, yeah.
Bjorn, you don't know why exactly, but you have this strange feeling that you're being watched.
Well, I keep my appearances, and as we cross corners and less apparent places, I throw an eye in possible directions.
You look around you. You know exactly what and where to look. Around you is mostly four-story buildings, parked cars. Was that up there on the roof of that building? Was that a figure wearing night vision goggles?
You have listened to an episode of Red Moon Roleplaying, where we play the campaign The Black Madonna for the tabletop role-playing game Cult Divinity Lost. The Black Madonna was originally constructed by Gunilla Jonsson and Mikael Petersen in 1991, with additional material for the 2017 edition by Marco Behrman, Mattias Fredriksson, Petter Nallo, and Robin Liljenberg. Cult Divinity Lost is published by Helmgast. The music was created by Atrium Carceri and is used with permission from their label Cryochamber. Visit cryochamber.bandcamp.com or their YouTube channel to hear more excellent dark ambient. A new episode of Red Moon Roleplaying is released every Friday. Please like our Facebook page and give us comments, input and feedback there. You can also visit us at redmoonroleplaying.com. Finally, a big thank you to all supporters. If you want to show your appreciation and encourage our work, look out for us on Patreon and see if you want to support the show there. While the show will always be free of charge to our listeners, Patreon supporters will have access to extra material, such as a bonus podcast where we answer your questions about the campaign and role-playing games in general. If you just can't wait, you can even get access to the full-length, raw, and unedited versions of our gaming sessions way before they are released as finished episodes. Thanks for listening. Looking forward to meeting again next week.